Hi, Evan here, just me for today, and I'm here with our very first ever, as far as I can remember, our very first bonus episode of the Speaking English podcast. Welcome to it. This is the home now of my 100 years ago project for 2023, and I'm here to talk about today all of the best movies. The movies from 100 years ago, from last year, which would be 1923, that should still be seen today. So this is a project that I've talked about on the normal pod quite a bit before, probably throughout the years. I started this towards the very end of 2021 and got a few in there, did it last year, or 2022. And now in 2023, I think I've kind of, maybe not perfected, but I've reached a version or a type of the project that I'm pretty happy with. Basically, I pick out all the movies that I feel like it should be important to see in the given year. Basically, the ones that are easily accessible, maybe. I don't know, just kind of the ones that I'm able to get my hands on. And I think the original shortlist or watch list is about 50, and I try to watch as many of those as I can. It didn't quite work out to get to all of them, for various reasons. Either the print that I find isn't quite up to, I don't know, it doesn't quite work out good enough quality to watch. There's a lot of them where not the full film still exists for the movie. So in those cases, I find it hard to judge it as a whole when the whole doesn't quite exist. So those are excluded. And then also it kind of depends, but if I couldn't find an English version with the intertitles. So in 1923, everything's still silent. They hadn't developed a sound processes that were like reliable and consistent enough until 27. So that's kind of the birth of the end of the silent era and the birth of the sound era. So we're still firmly in the silent era. So just intertitles, and certain ones would have different languages without a translation, and it would just depend. I don't think in this one this year there is actually any that I watched that just didn't have any sort of translation at all. But I could conceivably do it if it didn't feel too important. And I also, like, it's important, to me, it's important that it remains fun throughout the year for the project. So if there is any that the way that I found, the version of the movie that I found and was able to watch wasn't set up to be an enjoyable watch, like, irregardless of content, you know, because there are some that were like pretty bad that I had to kind of, you know, sit through. But if the quality is so bad that it's just not that great to watch, then I said, you know what, forget about it. I'll skip this one. So with all that being said, I ended up watching 38 movies from 1923 for 2023, last year's version of this project. I wanted to get through all the ones that I put on the list, so that's why this is coming out so late in the year. It'll be February already by the time this comes out, and I'll have to be starting my project for this year, now 2024, coming up. So yeah, I just want to get into it. I want to go ahead and do this before it gets too late, because I have seen all the movies that I want to and have decided the ones that hold up and are in the canon for this year of 1923. So I think let's get into it. From the 38, I picked out 11 that I think are still worthy of being seen. Of those 11, 8 are features and 3 are shorts. So I think there's, by this time, features have become the predominant way of making movies, I guess. Kind of once you get into the 19 teens or so, we start to lean more towards features. but there's still a lot of good shorts coming out. I would say that this year was a little weaker for super high quality shorts compared to the other 2 years that I've run this project. But I still found three enjoyable enough to widely recommend them to people today that still feel important to see. Okay, so I think that I have some honorable mentions for the features that I definitely want to talk about, but for the shorts, I think I'm just going to get into the ones that I would still recommend. So first of all is called The Nightingale's Voice. This is directed by Vladislav Starowitz, I think is how you might say that. He's a Polish slash Russian director. And this is actually, this one's part stop motion, part live action. But I've seen a couple of other of his movies from earlier, and he really liked doing stop motion animation with, like insect models specifically. There's a really good early one from 1912 called The Cameraman's Revenge that I've seen. That's quite fun. And I think is a good, like vision of his style. And I think that this one kind of follows in that. But I really liked it because it felt more polished, maybe. It seemed that everything going on was more controlled and easier to follow, probably. It wasn't as audacious with what he was doing, maybe. But it was just a really nice story, and I think the stop-motion animation was really cool. It clocks in at about 13 minutes long, and I think it's a great length to just kind of, I don't know, go on a nice trip, as I think movies should do. Take you on a trip. The next one up is maybe in a similar vein. It's not stop motion, but it's called Go West, directed by Len Powers. So I guess there was a series of these, but this is the first that I've seen or heard of it, and it might be one of the only ones that you can still see today. But basically it seems, this one is a Western style movie, but all of the characters are played by trained monkeys. And it's, I gotta admit, it's surprising how well it comes off, how natural it seems. So I guess those monkeys are good actors, but it's just such a fresh idea that you wouldn't really expect, that I think is played off really well. And it's a short and simple story. This one's about 12 minutes long. But I think it's definitely worth watching because I think it's just such a cool idea and concept that's executed actually super well. And I was particularly impressed by that one. It stood out. So that's the second short movie I would recommend. And then this last one, it's kind of complicated. So I don't know whether to call it a short or a feature, but it's The Pilgrim, directed by Charlie Chaplin. I was undecided. So it clocks in at about 47 minutes. And I don't know if we've talked about this on the main pod or not, but I really don't know how to, like, the set rules or whatever to classify something as either a short or a feature. So I struggled a lot with this one. And I think that decision was at the heart of this viewing that I had for this. Because I ultimately decided to call it a short because I think it works better as one. Basically, the concept is that Charlie Chaplin is a prisoner who escapes and then through turns of events ends up maybe not quite becoming the priest, but at least is forced to pretend that he's the priest of a small town church. Which is kind of funny because there's a Polish movie from 2019 that I really love called Corpus Christi. I really loved it, but it kind of takes the same general concept of being on the run and then having to disguise yourself as a priest and as a result being kind of ingrained into this community that you're pretending to be the priest of. That one's not a comedy. It takes it a lot heavier, but I would highly recommend it. It's one of my favorite movies from 2019. But The Pilgrim. So it doesn't quite hold its weight all the way as a feature. And so Sherlock Jr., which is a Buster Keaton movie that is going to be part of the project for this year in 2024, is one of my favorites. I think it's a little bit shorter than this one. And when you have to answer the question of whether something's a short or a feature, in that case, you lean more towards a feature because it works as a feature. This one, I wouldn't quite say that it doesn't work as well as a feature as it does a short. It's just a bit longer, I guess. Basically, I think that the gags in this are very well constructed, and it kind of plays on this similar theme. Like, you really get kind of one idea throughout, which I think is a really good concept for short. You know, you want to play like different scenarios that you can create based off of this concept, right? And I think it does that well, but it doesn't quite hang anything on that to flesh out the story further. And I guess if we're contrasting this against Sherlock Jr., that one has that through line and then is able to kind of create gags based around it, but then it goes in a couple of different directions and says more stuff with its themes, I guess, that really feels well executed. The Pilgrim feels a little bit long as a short, but I think it works better as a short because it doesn't quite fill the gaps, maybe. So with all that being said, I think it's the that's what makes it so interesting, is that it's kind of an in-betweeny deal, because by this point Chaplin has made features, and so this one's stands out to me as being kind of an in-betweeny, and I'm sure it was probably conceived as a feature, but something about it really works as a short to me, and it doesn't feel over long. I think you can, you know, maybe even like watch this in front of another movie and it'd be great. But there's just something interesting about it. And I personally just love this concept. And I think that the directions that you're able to take it and the gags that they pull from it is really great. So I would say should still be seen for the folks today. Cool. Yeah. So those are the shorts. Like I said earlier, it was a shorter short year this year compared to others. There wasn't as much crazy stuff that stood out, and I think part of that is because Buster Keaton, my favorite silent director, maybe is between Keaton and Murnau, who are very different. But he switched into features this year, so this is not the last you'll be hearing of Buster Keaton as we move forward. But I think that's a big part of it, because a lot of his shorts were the ones that I chose for past years. Okay, so before we do get into the features, this isn't really an announcement, but I want to kind of say a little bit more about the project, because I think I'm going to start, and I'm going to try to put it together in the coming weeks, look back at my previous years that I've done this, and kind of make a canon for this project. So choose the ones that I think people should still watch, and then put it together in like a letterbox list and have it to share. And I also want to work like retroactively, I guess, and choose movies from before this project started that belong in the canon, because I think that's tackleable. there's a lot of work there to do, but I think slowly but surely I want to build a canon that I can point to people to say, if you want to watch silent movies and be interested in them, these are the ones to check out. You can like either watch them in order or pick and choose, but I think that's cool, because I think there's so much that's very interesting about silent movies that a lot of people miss out on. And so part of this project is, you know, for me to kind of get a fuller picture of that era, but also to kind of, you know, give some recommendations maybe, and a place to start for people who are like, I want to, or even if they don't want to, I'm sure I'll tell people to be like, check out these silent movies, and see how you feel about it. See if it's something that you could see yourself getting into and watching more of. So that's kind of the point of the project, and I might, you know, slightly alter the list, take some out as we move forward, I think it's a cool thing to kind of to work on. And I think I'm going to try to start to build, like, make a list of that canon and kind of update it throughout the year too, for like past entries and past years. So let's move on. I'm going to to features. I want to, there's a couple that I want to talk about as honorable mentions that I wouldn't quite say still need to be seen, but I want to point out because they were interesting watches for part of this project. So a very well-known one from this year is A Woman of Paris, which is actually a Charlie Chaplin directed picture, which he does not star in. And I think that a lot of people might really like this. I personally thought it was okay. It was good. But if this is the only Charlie Chaplin movie that I think it's that you, that like someone watches, then I think that's very bad, because it's not, it doesn't feel important compared to a lot of the other stuff he did. And I wouldn't say that it's a bad movie by any means, but I don't think it needs to be seen, I guess, is the distinction I'd make. The next one is called Warning Shadows, directed by Arthur Robinson. Oh, Robinson. There's no N, I guess. Man, I don't know about this one. Okay, so it was probably, maybe not the coolest, but there are some of the things that it did were some of the coolest things that I saw from this year. It's in kind of the German expressionism tradition that was really big at the time. And I think a lot of the best silent movies from the early 20s kind of fall into this category of German expressionist movies. And I was really excited to watch this, and certain sequences were so cool. Some, like, yeah, like I said, some of the coolest things that I saw all this year. But as a whole project, as like a movie, it really doesn't work. The story is very simple, and it feels like everything's moving in slow motion. I think this is a big thing that comes up, or that I think of when I'm watching these, is how much do I notice the length? How much am I like drawn into it versus just waiting for like the next thing to happen, or getting stuck, getting bored when you know where the action's going, I guess. Which was quite a problem with this one. But it just did lots of cool different stuff with shadows. I don't want to get too much in the plot of this one, but honestly, I might would recommend it if you've seen other German expressionist movies and enjoyed and wanted to see more of that sort of thing. But I really can't recommend it to someone who's not super big into that category, because I think as a movie, it really comes up short and how it presents itself. But it still is an honorable mention. And so I'm going to actually contrast my last two that didn't quite make the list with two that did, and explain why one did and the other didn't. So I want to talk about The Extra Girl, which didn't make the list, against Souls for Sale, which did. So both of them kind of tackled this idea of trying to make it big in Hollywood, and it's the earliest movies that I've seen where this concept is explored. Moving on past this, it's a big ticket kind of thing in a lot of movies, or just the relationship that movies have when they're trying to mythologize Hollywood while being a part of it, or like the studio system. I think there's a really long and cool tradition of movies that are like that. I even took a class that mostly focused on movies like that. And these are the earliest that I've seen that done. So The Extra Girl is a better movie than Souls for Sale, most definitely. It's fun. It's kind of like a light comedy. And this is one of the earlier ones I saw this year. It was a comedy, definitely, but it felt different from like the physical comedies you get from like Chaplin or Keaton or Harold Lloyd. It did kind of its own thing, and it was really enjoyable to watch, but it didn't quite feel like all connected, didn't work fully as a story. But it was an enjoyable watch. But it kind of was on the surface level of having to be Hollywood, I guess, or show what it's like maybe in Hollywood. Meanwhile, Souls for Sale, while it doesn't quite really ever come together as a movie, it's still the first one that makes this list on the still should be seen. Because I think as maybe like a document of what movies, what Hollywood as a concept was like at that time, I think you can't really get better than this. Because I think there's something about it that it doesn't have that tradition of like movies about Hollywood to fall back on as much. So I think a lot of the ways that it does that sort of thing feel very fresh and important. And so I think it's this one, if you watch it, it's not necessary. You're not really keeping up with the workings of the plot as much, but it's really interesting to see, like you get to see sets in progress as they're shooting movies, which is kind of the same case as Sunset Boulevard, which is like one of the best movies ever, in my opinion. But that one also has like a great story to back it, and it is doing like a lot more stuff. But it's kind of the same thing of like you get like authentic looks in some ways, and in other ways it's still manufactured to be like a little bit propagandistic of Hollywood trying to, you know, put forward its own vision of itself. But there's a lot of cool stuff there that has like verisimilitude compared to like, you know, what's going on then, which I think is really cool. So even though The Extra Girl is a better movie by itself, maybe like in a vacuum, Souls for Sale becomes my first pick for features that should still be seen today. Because there's something so interesting about that dynamic that really stands out. Okay, so the next one, our last honorable mention goes to Three Ages, which is Buster Keaton's first ever feature, but I'm not quite sure I would call it a feature. It definitely is. It clocks in over an hour, but basically it tells the same story three different times. So it follows all the plot beats of a 20-minute short. It's just repeated in three different time periods. So basically, at least for me, a lot of the humor in this one was derived from how the similar thing is portrayed in the different time periods. You have one that's like caveman times. The second is like Roman era. And the third is modern day, or 1923 modern day, I guess. There's a lot of difference between then and 100 years later now that we're watching it. But so that was cool. There are cool parts to it, and it works, and it's funny. But it's kind of the same thing that like you're comparing it against everything else that Buster Keaton has done. And I think it's definitely, of what I've seen, and I've seen most of them by now, it's his weakest feature. And I think like as a short, it isn't as funny as a lot of his shorts that are so precise with their gags and so imaginative at what they strive for. So it feels a little bit not quite there. It's still a fun and interesting watch, but it doesn't need to be seen. So that's my last honorable mention. So now we have seven features that I think, well, eight total, if you include Souls for Sale, which I am. I don't know why I said if. But so the next seven, from seventh to first. Next up, we have The Covered Wagon, directed by James Cruise. This is in at number seven. Really kind of the proto-Western. That's like the big draw for watching this today. It's a Western, but not quite. Basically, it follows a wagon train as they go out west to do a settlement, I think. And it all the melodrama involved, I guess. And this one really stood out to me because I think it really nails kind of this romanticism of the West, the open, I don't know, like it was kind of like Manifest Destiny vibes, which, you know, might not be the best, but I think it's this idea that you see played out so much through Westerns, and you get to see it before it really kind of takes on all the imagery and iconography. And I think that makes it really interesting. you really get to see that with the lead character. Will Banyan is his name. I had to look it up real quick, but it is a very interesting character because he's like a Western hero, but not quite. It's a different flavor of that because it wasn't quite nailed on what your Western hero should be. So it's like not quite fully defined yet. And it makes it interesting in that way. And I think that's like the real appeal of the Covered Wagon. Plus the fact that it's, you know, it's very watchable. I think the drama, even though it's, you know, fairly predictable, it all comes off really fun. And I don't know, it works out well. I think it's definitely should still be seen today. So yeah, I'm going to move on to number six. And I guess I should point out that I did a full write-up on Letterboxd also for each of these. So I think you can hear some of my thoughts there. And I'm sure it'll be not here. You can read a lot of my thoughts there. But a lot of it is like saying the same sort of stuff. But there, I don't know. I tried pretty hard in writing these to kind of give my take on the movie like fresh after I watched it. So if something sounds intriguing to you, you can also go check out whatever review I put for it on Letterboxd. So moving on, at number six, we have The White Sister, directed by Henry King. This is our big melodrama entry from this year. And a lot of silent movies that I think I've come across from this project ply their trades in melodrama, and that's fine, but it usually doesn't work for me. So I think I really stop and take notice when it does. And I think The White Sister is one that really stood out because it the way that it deals with its melodrama is very well done, I think. It stars Lillian Gish, who I think is quickly becoming my favorite silent film actress. I don't know, she's legit. Yeah, and I don't think that's an unpopular opinion. She's like pretty legendary for a reason. And I've mostly seen her in movies directed by D.W. Griffith from earlier than this. And she did stuff after. But I think this might be the first movie that I saw of hers that wasn't a Griffith movie. And she really steals the show in this one. I think she is incredible. And it makes sense to me why she's like the legend that she is, and I'm quickly becoming a huge fan. I think she absolutely bodies this movie. And so basically it's the melodrama follows. There's a lady who is upper class, not quite royalty, but like very rich and stuff. Her sister somehow like gets her to not get the money that she should, and she's kind of pushed away. She's supposed to marry this guy, and he goes off to war, and she thinks he dies. The news comes back, he's dead. And so she takes an oath of sisterhood. She becomes a nun. And then he returns. And then she has to deal with the conflict of what to do. and there's a lot more to it than that. I guess that's just kind of a simplified version. And what I really liked about this one is that it doesn't dwell on this one issue for so long. This one is a pretty long movie. It clocks in at 135 minutes, but it doesn't feel as long as some shorter movies that I watched for this project this year. Because it keeps it moving, and it really doesn't dwell on this main issue, I guess, for longer than it needs to. And I think that the way that it was plotted out was really well done at moving things along. You would kind of getting stuck in a scene isn't the right word necessarily, but like you would stay on like a moment for a while, but I think it jumped from moment to moment really, really well. And then when you are lingering in these moments, you have Lillian Gish's great performance to help you through them, I guess. I was just really impressed with it. And I think that to see so much bad melodrama this year, I think this one really stands out as being good. So I fully endorse it. I think it still should be seen today. That's The White Sister, directed by Henry King. Okay, let's move along to number five. which is called The Burning Crucible, directed by Ivan Mosjukin. I don't know. That's probably like very wrong. This guy might not be a name, is a name that you may or may not have heard of, but if you have probably taken any film class in any situation or watched like a fair share of film essays on YouTube, you've probably seen this man's face, because he was well known as an actor. And the specific thing that you've probably seen him in, if you have, is the Kuleshov effect. If that rings a bell, then you might know exactly what I'm talking about. But he's the actor in the Kuleshov effect demo. Basically, Lev Kuleshov, who's a Soviet theorist and director, put together a very famous experiment where he uses the same shot of an actor making a pretty impassive face, which is Mosjukin. And then by editing and cutting it against first like a bowl of soup, I'm looking at the cover, and so like a bowl of soup and then like a dead child and then a pretty lady, you get different you get different feelings. It seems like his expression is different based on what it's cut against. And this was like all about, you know, editing and the power of montage and this concept that the Soviets were really all in on. So it's a very famous video, and you might have been exposed to it at some point if you're listening. But that actor directed two movies, and this is the second. And I think it was great. Quite a weird one. And I think the biggest appeal for me comes from its kind of mashing together of influences. I think that there's elements of it that if you're like drawing comparisons between schools of the time, that there's elements of German expressionism. There's elements of the Soviet montage, which I mentioned a little bit just a second ago. And then like French impressionism also, which was probably less prolific in filmmaking, but definitely have movies that like show that example. I think he was Russian and French. Yeah, so Russian guy moved to Paris for like professionally at some point. I think this is a French movie technically. But yeah, I think the mixing of influences is very clear in this one and makes it very interesting. I think that's like the primary appeal. This is also one that I saw like very early on in the year, but I think the best parts of this are at the beginning. I think the story works and is still good throughout. It's kind of like a lighter dramedy once you get into it, but like the way that this starts and then the first few scenes are very like surreal and kind of trippy. You're in a dream sequence, and then as you wake up, things still are weird. And it stays weird for like the first 20 to 30 minutes. There's like secret societies and all sorts of interesting stuff. At a certain point, it kind of goes back to treading more familiar territory. But there's really some really weird and cool imagery that comes off quite well in this one. So I think that it's definitely worth watching. And I think it's one that's generally, the people who have seen it rate it fairly highly, but it's a little bit underseen, I think. But yeah, the director, Ivan Mosjukin, also plays the main character. And I think it works well. I think the biggest part that stands out is kind of these surreal and crazy moments at the beginning, but it really stays entertaining throughout. And I think that there's something to that too. So yeah, I this is one that I want to actually watch again, because I think that there's some interesting ideas in it that I want to revisit for myself. So yeah, that's The Burning Crucible, directed by Ivan Mosjukin. Moving to number four, this is Why Worry, directed by Fred Neumeier and Sam Taylor. It's a Harold Lloyd star project. So Harold Lloyd is kind of the final of the big three, I guess, of your silent film comedic giants, I guess. The other two being Buster Keaton and Charlie Chaplin. Harold Lloyd kind of stands apart. He didn't really direct his own movies, and I think that that's a big draw for Chaplin and Keaton, because I think they're two of like your better silent movie directors at the same time as being incredibly funny. And I think there's a lot of stuff that carries over in that comedic timing and sense of, instead of performing in front of the camera, you're doing, making cool decisions behind it. And I think that's like adds to the appeal for both of them. But Harold Lloyd, I think, had a specific talent for being kind of an everyman. Like, as the audience, you're able to kind of project yourself more into his characters. They're less larger than life movie characters, and it's more just kind of your everyday guy that just gets into these crazy situations. So there's a number of his movies, and actually the number one movie from this year that I would say is another Harold Lloyd movie. But I also wanted to include this one in the canon because it's different from other Harold Lloyd movies that I've seen. This one goes off the rails. A lot of it is just so bizarre and makes no sense. Well, it makes sense, but just goes directions that you wouldn't really expect. It kind of bucks this trend that I was just mentioning of like your everyday guy just getting put into these weird situations and having to get out of them. This one, he plays a very kind of annoying character. So it's less kind of relatable. You're not really projecting yourself as his character as much in this one. The word that I described it is unhinged, because it really goes places that it's just like, huh. Just goofy gags. I think this one, just as it gets more ridiculous as it goes on, it's like well served by that. I think at the beginning it seems like it doesn't have quite enough there to be a full feature after like the original concept, but that's when it starts to kind of really get into this more ridiculous territory that I think is played off so well in this one. And I would just really recommend it. It's a short watch. This one's only about 60 minutes, I think. And just like go along for the ride, because I think the places that this one goes are unexpected, and I think it really stands out because Harold Lloyd doesn't really do this type of stuff as much. And it's unique, and I think it really comes off well in this one. So I would recommend it. It's called Why Worry? So now we're into the top three, and I have our last drama. This is actually the last movie I watched for this project for last year. So it might be because it's so fresh that I'm putting it so high up, and the rankings don't really matter as much as whether I'm saying it should still be watched today or it shouldn't. But it's The Hunchback of Notre Dame, the 1923 version, not the Disney animated one. Directed by Wallace Worsley is the director, and I'm not really familiar with this guy. I think this is the only movie I've seen from him. But this one stars Lon Chaney as Quasimodo, the Hunchback of Notre Dame. And this one's a big budget spectacle for sure. A lot of the scenes in this one utilize huge crowds, and you really feel the scale of it in a lot of places. But I think the biggest thing, the coolest thing for this one for me is how vividly the characters are sketched out. I think that a lot of times in silent movies, like silent dramas, you kind of get characters that fall into these categories that really don't have like much of a personality or charm to them. They're just kind of like cardboard cutouts. And I don't know how much of, I've never read the book, you know, so I don't know how much of this is the source material, but I think something that this movie gets really right is the way that it's able to kind of present its characters. I was really impressed by that. And it's a pretty complex story, the way that it's shown in the picture, but it all makes sense. Like, I was able to follow it quite well throughout. And I've had strong feelings for a lot of the characters in either like positive or negative ways. And I would say that even though this one stars technically Lon Chaney as Quasimodo, he's not the main character. The plot machinations go on with or without him in this one. But he really adds the heart and punctuates a lot of these scenes in a super satisfying way that I think is interesting. I think it's akin to, I compared it in my little review to Marlene Dietrich in Shanghai Express, where you have your star actor, the most recognizable, the top billing. But if they play a single character as part of a bigger ensemble, and then they still stand out like crazy and really kind of create the most unique dynamic about the movie. I don't know. I'm just a big fan of that. And I think that's definitely the case here. I think Shanghai Express also does that. Like that's the thing that I think you can draw it to because it feels like a similar situation. But yeah, I was just really impressed by this one. And I think it's does the big budget scale to a really good degree. And I think this is something I kind of think about, you know, in all big scale movies is like, how do you reconcile the small, like the micro drama against the macro drama? And I think this one gets it really right. And, I was just really impressed by this one. And I'm glad that I ended up, you know, taking the extra time and digging into the new year to watch these last few. This was actually the last one and it was so worth it. So definitely should still be seen today. My last two that I have to talk about are both comedies by people that I've talked about before. The first is Our Hospitality, or Second Place, I guess I would say, is Our Hospitality, directed by Buster Keaton. And I guess this one was co-directed by John Blystone. Wow, this is Keaton as a feature filmmaker. This is his first like real feature, and I think he gets it so right. And it's so fresh. This is one that I've seen before, but on this viewing, I was really, really struck by how raw it is. he's just going for it. It's not a fine-tuned, well-oiled machine. But like the things that he goes for, there's a specific stunt in this one that I think might be like the most audacious thing that he's done in any of his movies. And it, like I had a real reaction when I was watching it. Like I had to like stand up or something. I don't know. It was crazy. But on the other hand, there's also things that are maybe like some jokes that go on too long, or like it lingers on an idea for a little bit too long and doesn't quite get funny fast enough with a concept. And I don't know if this feels like nitpicking. I mean, it's my number two movie of the year, but I think it's just because everything that Buster Keaton touches is so good. That this one's really interesting because it's kind of, I wouldn't say it's sloppy, but it's just, I think raw is a good word for it. Like he's really kind of testing the conventions and the ways that you make a feature instead of a short, which I think is really cool. But I think it's really essential. And so good. Basically, the concept is that there's a decades-long feud between two families, and Buster Keaton visits town where his family used to live. He meets this girl on a train who he likes, who he fancies, some would say. She ends up being the daughter of this other family, and he goes to visit, right? And they don't find out that he's the one that they're trying to shoot until he's inside their house. And basically, you know, Southern hospitality says that you have to give someone the best welcome while they're in your house. So a lot of running around, and Buster Keaton has to get away from this house where they're trying to kill him, but they can't kill him unless he's outside of the house. So hijinks ensue, as happens in all of these silent comedies. But maybe I should have described the plot like after I said everything else I had to say about it, or I mean before I had said everything else I had to say about this movie. But I think this is one that I would say could be like your, I think it was my intro to Buster Keaton back in the day. And I think it works great as that. So, but I think he would like even improve from this. And this is like such a great, such like a high mark to start at. And then to even like improve moving forward is crazy to me. But you'll hear more about that next year, I guess. And then finally, number one, our last movie that still should be seen today is called Safety Last. This is also directed by Fred Neumeier and Sam Taylor. Starring Harold Lloyd. This has probably one of the more iconic shots of all of silent cinema, which is basically Harold Lloyd, like he's climbing up a building and there's a clock and he like pulls on the clock and it like goes outwards. If you might know what I'm talking about, like you might would know it if you saw it, but Safety Last is there's a little more to it than that, but it does revolve around this giant set piece of climbing this wall, and there's like some stuff that leads up to it, but this is the more common Harold Lloyd picture where you just get situations that get out of hand and he's just trying to your main guy is just trying to get through the day. He heads to the city and he tells his girl back home that he wants to marry, that he's very successful. She says, wow, that's great. Comes to visit him. But basically, he's not successful. He's just been setting all that he's earned, like to buy presents to send back or whatever. And he has to, you know, kind of hide the fact that he's not as prosperous as you might would expect. And once again, hijinks ensue. But this one kind of results from him just trying to, you know, get through it and different scenarios. I think the cause and effect of like how things lead to another is so like fine tuned in this one. That once you get to the ridiculous points where he ends up just like climbing the side of a building, it all makes sense. It all works. There's like some fun recurring gags in this one, right? And I think it's one that already is pretty well seen. Like, I think it's of all of these, it's probably the one that maybe a few people have already seen, or at least like seen images or scenes from, because it's quite iconic in that way. But it's so deserving of it. So that's going to be, the one that everyone should still see today. I think at the end of the day with this, so that concludes the list. So now we're in the conclusion portion of this bonus episode. I think with this year, there's a few. I think The Burning Crucible stands out the most as like a lot of people probably wouldn't think to watch this one, but I think it's so worthy of still being seen. But a lot of the other ones are kind of the more well-known or well-regarded. I think in previous years, every year that I've done this project, there's always been at least one that is just like, I never really heard of this, but now it's like one of my favorite movies from this year. And the ones that I think were the best from this one were probably the ones that were already well known. But I mean, if you don't know them already, like there you have it. But I don't know if people are listening are more already into silent movies, like these are the ones that you already know. But there's also something that's satisfying to confirm that. And I guess for anyone listening that does just want to get into it, these are the place to start. So there you have it. Yeah, I'm glad I got to sit down and kind of do this for this year. And it kind of concludes this. And now I'm going to start watching the movies for this year, for 2024. And I'm excited about it. I'm glad I got to sit down and do this. So thanks for listening and sitting through if you made it all the way through the whole thing. And these are all pretty much available on YouTube. You can like maybe look to see if they're on other streaming services, because sometimes they're in high quality in one place but not on YouTube. But I think I watched pretty much all of these on YouTube, or at least they're I think they're all available on YouTube. I watched some of them on Criterion Channel if they were on there, or like Canopy, some of them are on, or like other various places, but they're all available to watch. So it wouldn't hurt, you know, to just maybe sit down one day and check out a silent movie. But from 1923, those are the ones that you should see. So once again, I'm going to put together a list of my canon for this project so far, and kind of, you know, over the course of time, add in some more from before I started this project, from 1920 and before. And it'll be a nice little canon that'll go hand in hand with these yearly projects. So that's all for me for now. Thank you for listening. This is our first ever bonus episode, I'm pretty sure. So yeah, hope you enjoyed, and we'll catch you on the normal normal podcast feed sometime in the next week or so. Cool. Bye now.